Hi, Mickey.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine, but you're going to be incredibly jealous of me.
Why? What happened?
I went to a private concert by an artist at this ad agency, or this, I don't know what it is. It's called Media Lab, and it does the ads for Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And artists are so eager to do Apple ads that they will go there for free, transport their whole band,
mm-hmm.
and buy beer and ice cream for people who come to see them for free. And guess which artist I saw?
Regina Spektor?
You betcha.
Did I get it?
Yes.
That's pretty good, huh?
And
I didn't know. That was a guess. That was virtually clairvoyant.
Well, it was pretty obvious. But
no.
It could have been...
Could have been the Beatles.
No, it could have been, Jill Sobule.
That was what I thought at first, but then I thought I wouldn't have been as jealous of her as... I've seen Jill Sobule. I've spoken to Jill Sobule.
You've spoken to Regina Spektor.
What?
You've spoken to Regina Spektor.
No, I haven't. My daughters and wife have spoken to her. I was not being a fanboy that night.
Now, not to... she was really good. She had a cold. She only sang five songs. But not to be... Not to do a neg here, but in 10 years, she's obviously going to be a little babushka. She's a cute little Russian girl. And she's becoming a babushka before our eyes.
Hey, Mickey. Could you cut it out? I've got this deal. I've got, this back condition.
Yeah?
And there's three things that really hurt it. There's actually about five, counting existence.
But one
of them is laughing. Sneezing, coughing, and laughing. So don't make me laugh, man. And that wasn't funny anyway.
That's right. Why were you laughing at this
what kind
offensive
of
comment about Regina Spektor? That seems beneath you.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny that you should say that about her, because she speaks very highly of you, Mickey.
I'm sure.
We
have to protect the Bob brand, so we can't have Bob laughing inappropriately.
No, we can't. But, I may do a lot of inappropriate things. You know why?
Why?
Because they gave me this drug for my back. It's a steroid. And you want to hear what some of the side effects are? It's prednisone. And you want to hear some of the side effects?
Grandiosity.
What?
Grandiosity.
Actually, that is a subset of one of these. I will, I'll read the, this comes from the, the web.
Okay.
Side effects may include depression, euphoria, insomnia, mood swings, personality changes, and even psychotic behavior. So, whenever people watch Blogging Heads, there's almost an electric sense of anticipation because anything can happen on Blogging Heads. But this is going to be a really special dialogue in terms of just the sheer potential.
It's going to be like watching Dan Rather. Who knows what you're going to do?
Courage. And,
people want to be there when it happens.
Aside from that, somebody with experience with this said it actually makes you somewhat belligerent. And I've noticed that in my recent phone conversations. So, stay tuned, folks. Plus, I'm in periodic pain. I mean, I'm going to have to be adjusting my... that'll be interesting, too, to watch me adjust my seat.
Well, this is something to look forward to.
Yeah. So what are you going to talk about?
I'll be on my best beta male behavior.
That's what you're good at, buddy.
First, you've been cheating on me, Bob.
With?
Andrew Sullivan. You've been blogging for...
You never
feel about that.
You never asked me to guest blog for you, Mickey.
What can I say, I knew from the beginning when you wanted to dive blog with Andrew Sullivan that he was your first choice and I was like number two, and you know that hurts me, Bob.
One of the main reasons I did it was to hurt you.
That's just the prednisone.
This is the prednisone. That's the prednisone talking, Bob. I felt kind of bad that it was a week where I was doing... In fact, I was doing some of the traveling that ruined my back, schlepping around New York, carrying stuff. And so I didn't have time to really focus on the job. It would be fun to really be able to focus on the blogging job, as you well know, Mickey, having done it for, a decade.
Let's just say your output for Andrew was not prodigious.
Compared to who, buddy? I was doing it with, one hand tied behind a back.
Compared,
I matched your daily output easily in the average day.
You did three a day, Bob?
I did more than three a day. Right. How many do you do a day?
3.
And I wasn't getting paid. Imagine if I was getting paid.
God, it would have been a torrent. It would be like a fire hose. But your links were just like prepackaged links to like parts of your book mostly.
That is such a lie. Not paying attention. Go back and review my output. In fact, I'll have you know that there has been word from the Atlantic that they might not mind my doing it again sometime.
Well, I would think they would give you $300,000 to blog for them the same way they did with Andrew.
That number was thrown around.
That's why I'm not jealous. You know, this is $300,000.
It's only $300,000.
Your book was called Enthralling by the New Yorker, I believe.
By the New Yorker.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. we're doing the neg here. We reduce the self-esteem and then we build it back up.
The neg, we should say, is a technique used by people in the PUA community. That would stand for pickup artist, guys who, pick up.
Right, it is.
And they say something negative about the woman and that somehow raises their value in her eyes.
Right, we'll get to the neg later.
We'll get to the neg later. This was Connor Friedersdorf did pioneering reporting on this on the very blog that I was guest blogging on. Mickey, I'm going to have to, change my chair or something so I don't scream out in pain. But go ahead.
Scream out in pain. That'd be great.
I know. It's about to happen. I'm telling you. I thought I was fine. The prednisone was like a miracle drug for the first, 12 hours, and then I think I made a mistake. I went and did some errands. Anyway, talk to me about healthcare, Mickey. Healthcare.
I'm hoping you'll scream out in pain, but
it's going to happen.
Healthcare. Okay.
How is that healthcare
going? I got an email from Barack Obama today, saying that this is the moment.
Dear Mickey.
Me personally got an email from the President of the United States, Barack Obama, and said that this is the moment. This is the moment that they to show what the Obama organizing. It's all come down to this, and it's this month of August, and it's the crucial month. Well, first, I hope it's not a crucial month, because Obama's going to get killed in the month of August. In fact, my only hope is that he'll get killed so badly that it'll be, absurd, and people will just laugh it off.
Metaphorically, you mean. Killed metaphorically.
Yes. If they're going to go to these town hall meetings, and they're going to get yelled at and screamed at, and it's not going to be popular, and the polls show them entering August not very popular.
But shouldn't that technique backfire on these opponents of healthcare?
Why? Did it backfire when they surrounded Dan Rostenkowski's car and jumped on it and pushed it up and down? What happened? They canceled the program.
They won.
Rostenkowski chickened out.
I think Obama should use this. I think he should... He should call these people, take them to task.
Oh, that's what they're going to do, and it's not going to work.
What's not going to work?
There's a real concern out there, so instead of addressing it, you call them thugs and hooligans? That's not going to work. That's a proven loser.
Okay, well, let's start. I'll tell you what I have in mind, but let's go back. Why don't you give me a review? You've been keeping track of this, I trust. So, can I just ask you a series of questions that will clarify this whole thing for all viewers?
Yes, and I do have, there are two reasons for hope I have.
Well, so. Obama's about hope.
Okay, well, we'll just make sure I get to the hope.
Okay, I won't let you forget.
Okay.
So, is there, first of all, a coherent plan whose fate is at stake, or are there just a bunch of little bills floating around? What is the deal? Has a plan taken shape?
Well, there's no one plan, but it's pretty clear what the outlines are.
Okay, what are the outlines?
They're not going to do Wyden-Bennett, which is get rid of the employer insurance system and make everybody buy it in the market. They're not going to do single payer. They're not going to expand Medicare just by lowering the age of eligibility gradually, which actually some people, including Brad DeLong, are coming around to. They're going to do some version of what Obama has planned all along, which is... people who have their employer coverage keep their employer coverage. People who have Medicare keep Medicare. We subsubsidize the people who are the loose people who are don't have insurance.
Okay,
these health exchanges to buy insurance. And the only question is how big the subsidy will be, how will that be structured, who gets to go into the health exchange, and will there be a public option in the health exchange? But basically,
those are big questions. So what do we know about what it would mean for me? Suppose I have no affiliation, I need health insurance. Right now it's exorbitantly expensive for a person like me. But I can get it anywhere. It's just that I can't afford it.
Well, you would go.
What would it be?
You would go onto a health exchange, and you're probably too rich to be subsidized. So
hey,
the subsidy goes up to like $68,000 for a family of four at best. I think you're not going to get it.
And in a bad year, easily. But what's the?
Well, it depends if David Bradley comes through with those Atlantic, checks, but. That'll put you like into the million. You'll be taxed. You'll be in the millionaire's tax if that happens. But anyway, so you go into this insurance exchange, and you'll be able to buy a policy. Now, in theory, they won't be able to discriminate against prior conditions. You'll have to get like one rate. They won't be able to. There'll be sort of community rating. Now, in fact, that'll probably, in your case, make it a little more expensive because you probably don't have very many big pre-existing conditions except this.
I'm looking at one right now, buddy.
But it's not an expensive one. A simple pill of prednisone cures it all.
No, I think we may be talking beyond pills.
Anyway.
But here's my question. So what you're saying, there's no subsidy if a family of... four is making like $90,000, $80,000, $75,000 a year. They get no subsidy?
I don't think so. It's a little below that.
Well, then what has changed?
Well, because most Americans make less than that, Bob. You're in the elite.
A fair number of families of four do not make less than $68,000, Mickey.
Right, but I bet the median is about there.
Okay, so half of Americans get no help here? No wonder it's not popular.
Well, you'll if there's a government option, there will be, maybe this proves that the government option is necessary.
Yeah, maybe
there's a government
it does.
Option, you'll have
I mean, they've got to have something to show people who are making above the median and well above the median. Because everyone in this economy, they are as vulnerable in a certain sense as low-income people, because in this economy, anybody can lose a job.
Yeah. No,
and
that's,
the people hiring aren't giving you health care.
You are now making the very case that Obama has failed to make.
I know, and that's why it seems to me he should go populist.
Why is that populist to appeal to affluent?
Well, here's the half of it that's populist. He should go on TV and say, look, 10 years ago the deal was if you lost your job, you were screwed as far as health care goes. 5 years ago, the same thing. We've been working to change it. It never changes because of these entrenched interests. Here's where you go populist. And you say... I'm trying to change it, but it's starting to look like they may succeed again in thwarting the will of the people. They're even sending people to town meetings to disrupt the meeting, so we can't even talk about it. That's what I would say if I were you. I'd go populist.
Why can't you do exactly the same thing except without the demonizing? Say, look,
we want
an economy where you don't have to worry about losing your job, where you don't have to worry about not being able to leave your job. I mean, John Alter wrote a column in Newsweek where he points out he can't leave Newsweek because if he leaves Newsweek, he can't get health insurance because he had cancer. That's a horrible situation.
Yeah,
So we don't want to trap people in jobs like that.
No.
Free John Alter.
Well, I think he is going to be freed, but it's going to be because Newsweek left him, not because he left Newsweek.
But let's not
talk about the plight of new media or old.
But the point is, you don't have to make the positive case for health security. You can sketch out this wonderful world where this is off the table. You don't have to worry about it anymore than old people worry about Medicare. You don't have to demonize anybody for that, and it's weird that Obama, wants to demonize the insurance companies after sucking up to them for 6 months.
You just said these people who come, this whole idea of coming to these meetings and disrupting them is going to work. Well, that consists largely of demonizing. The whole point of that is to demonize the people who are trying to hold the town hall meeting.
Right. So you undemonize yourself by showing you're a reasonable person who doesn't go around demonizing insurance companies.
But I just thought you said that form of demonizing works. Why are you only for right-wing demonizing? I like these steroids, This is like the old days when I used to scream at you. this is good. Roid rage.
A good question. I'll come up with an answer to that. But I think I guess I tend to think When the right does it, it expresses a legitimate concern, and when the left does it, it's evil populism. How about
exactly.
That?
That is what you think. That is what you think.
I will. If you had the afterthoughts question, I could think of the answer and post it, but you've eliminated the afterthoughts section.
No, we can still make your comments sticky. We can make your comments stay on top.
Yeah, but then I have to deal with your minions that to do that. That's, it used to be automatic.
Yeah.
I don't want to deal with Bob Wright's minions. They're even, you know, more steroidal than you are.
They're wonderful. They don't get steroids because they don't have health care.
They're nice.
I'm the only one at this company that gets steroids.
They're nice people. They're nice.
Yeah.
People. But anyway, you know, if he's not starting from a wildly popular position, so it seems to me if there's a battle of demonization, at best it's a draw. He's not going to be in a better position in September. They're not going
to be. He's got to be able to tell people making above median income, including well above it, that this improves their situation and makes them more secure.
I agree, but those people tend not. Do those people cotton to populist demonization? I mean, they're in the upper quarter of the income, and I don't know. I don't.
Well,
I've never seen populism work. It didn't work for Hillary Clinton. Why is it going to work for Obama? It doesn't suit Obama. He's not a populist, and it. You know, he's in the correct prescription is well, anyway, it's true.
So
that
what's your prognosis?
Prognosis is first. They're obviously they're in the fallback plan B. They're going to be that in September. Good things are the economy is going to get better. So if it waits till next year, the economy is better. Obama's more popular. People forget about the stimulus. They think the stimulus worked. The Democrats are in a much better posture to pass it. So I don't know why this rush to pass it now. They'll be in a better position in the spring. And I think that's what's going to happen. Second, a lot
spring.
Of workers...
Jeez.
Sorry, what?
I could, like, by the time... By spring, my back could be, you know, jello.
Or it could be cured, you know? So...
There's no excuse for this.
Anyway...
They should have had something ready to go out of the gate when they passed the stimulus package. If they had had something ready, they could have thrown it in and passed it in a minute.
Yeah. Well,
easily.
That option is lost.
I realize that.
The second thing is a lot of the opposition is just kabuki, and the blue dogs are just pretending to be fiscally conservative, and they'll fall in line at the end.
All I'm saying, it's not so much populism, and I'll leave this, it's not so much populist demonization. He has to set it up so that the people who vote against his plan are the people who are blamed whenever anyone like loses a job and can't get health insurance or feels they can't afford their whatever, you know, has to make it clear whose fault your suffering is.
You see, I don't think the insurance industry is the big obstacle to the plan. They're not the people who are astroturfing and sending out these people.
Who
the insurance
doing?
Industry has been completely honest and said, look, we support Obama, we don't want a public option.
So who's doing the astroturfing?
Republicans.
Just to make him look bad?
Yes. And also because there's a legitimate fear out there of rationing and cost control, and if Obama would just stop talking about cost control, he would be well ahead of the game and start talking about these positive benefits.
Politicians are way too cynical to ever have an actual legitimate fear, Mickey.
If you don't think that the people are worried that Obama, after talking about how he's going to appoint these experts to save costs by recommending certain treatments not be fully reimbursed, that people aren't worried that they're going to need a treatment and they're not going to get it?
Yeah, I think...
Of course they're worried.
I think people are worried and the politicians think they can exploit the worry. I don't think the politicians are genuinely worried or...
Well, no, because they're covered. But David Broder's obviously worried. He wrote... an old guy like David... Clueless guy like David Broder is you know, as he's going to be the first guy put out on the ice floe. Do you know the concept of ice floe, Bob?
You mean the Eskimo thing?
Yeah, people are worried that their granny's going to be put on the ice floe and said, do your part to save costs in the medical system and bend the curve. See you later, granny. Nice life you had.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to send her out to sea. That's what people are worried about. There was a great cartoon on Lucienne.com it showed an ice floe, and it said cash for clunkers too. And there was two grannies in a wheelchair. One said $4,500, one said $3,500. And they were being pushed out to sea in the new cash for clunkers program, where the government will give you $4,500 if you push granny out to sea.
Mm-hmm.
It was
I'm for that.
It totally captured the essence of the fear that is out there. Just stopped talking about it. He didn't have to stop talking about it. This gets to the next topic, which is what's wrong with Obama.
Yeah, what is wrong with Obama, Mickey?
Well, A, he really believes this stuff, okay?
What stuff?
Well, he really believes that he has to talk about... He really believes this Peter Orszag, we have to control long-term costs. So we do have to control long-term costs, but they're long-term. We don't have to do it now. We can get universal insurance now and talk about long-term costs later. But he can't stop talking about it because he really believes it. He's enthralled, to use a word, with that Atul Gawande article in The New Yorker. He thinks it's the end of the world. And we're just going to bend the curve by stopping those vicious doctors in McAllen, Texas, from ordering unnecessary tests. This is going to be the cure-all. And he's not like a cynical Paul who can drop it if it's not working, because he really believes it. He can't drop it. So he was starting to drop it, and then he had this press conference where he brought it all up again. And he's obviously, Orszag is his Svengali. So that's the problem, is he's thin. He doesn't really know a lot, so he can be Svengali by God like Orszag. He knows the brief. He doesn't know a lot about healthcare. He knows what he's told. He's captive of people like Orszag and people who Orszag has selected to talk to him. So he really believes this stuff, and he's not enough of a cynical Paul to drop it if it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's like recipe for disaster number one. Recipe for disaster number two is, Jake Weisberg was wrong in that he's not going against whatever Bush does. He's very similar to Bush in that he has these grandiose plans. He doesn't want to play small ball. So he actually said, if you pass a bill that gives universal care and is deficit neutral over 10 years, I will veto it because it doesn't control costs in 20 years. That's grandiose. That's insane. Nobody believes it. But anybody who says that is
on
the victim of some kind of hubris and prednisone steroidal grandiosity. Yeah. So
yeah.
Why does he say it's completely wacky? It's just like Bush with comprehensive immigration reform. I want to solve the whole problem all at once. I've got to solve immigration reform all at once. I've got to solve the Middle East all at once by invading Iraq. All with one big giant swoop. I, Obama, I'm going to solve this problem, and the newspaper editorial boards are going to laud me. So those are the two things we've learned about this guy.
So that's a sign of grandiosity. Is it a sign of grandiosity to have grandiose theories about that explain everything and involve the grandiosity of others?
No, because then you're in trouble.
Mm.
I'm in trouble too, you're saying.
Conceivably, but you and I agree that the emphasis shouldn't have been, rhetorically, shouldn't have been on cost control, should have been on safety net. We've agreed to that. So, but what about, you were going to give us, so this is related to a larger critique of Obama, or is healthcare the only example of this?
There must be things he knows more about in healthcare. There was just some point in his press conference where he was lecturing everybody on healthcare, and he kept coming back to the same example of McAllen, Texas, when you realize this guy doesn't really have that much depth of knowledge. He's lecturing us on things he just learned, yesterday, which, distinguishes him from Ezra Klein, who lectures us on things he just learned 20 minutes ago. But same sort of deal.
But the
he's
thing
not
they
a
have
great
in
authority.
Common, the thing they have in common, him and Ezra Klein, is if he challenged you to a debate, you'd be afraid to do that too, right?
Well, it's there's no risk in debating up. The risk of an alpha male like me is debating. Although, now that Ezra Klein is the number one blogger on Mediaite, I guess he's alpha and I'm beta.
At best, I would put you more toward omega on that spectrum.
Is that the third one?
Omega would be the very end of the alphabet, Mickey.
Well, there you go. I still don't want to debate him.
Okay.
But I'm going to try the Ezra Klein sideways head waggle. See if that works for me. I don't think it's
working. I ran into Ezra in person.
And how did
that go?
In
real life person.
How did that go?
Went fine, I was having dinner with highly esteemed people, Mike Kinsley and Ann Hulbert and the famous writer Gary Crist.
Jesus.
It was like, and then like another whole younger set of highly esteemed people show up, and it's like you know them, and I was in heaven.
What restaurant?
It was somewhere, you got me, it was off of Wisconsin, some kind of pizza-ish joint.
Huh.
I might know the name, but I don't know.
And that was it?
That's the whole anecdote. How'd you like it?
Yes, didn't have a punchline.
I wasn't planning it. You just brought up Ezra, as is your want. Do you have like an Ezra thing, Mickey?
I'm trying to make it
Do
an
Do you ever
Ezra
dream
thing.
About him?
Please. Only when I'm on Singulair and I'm having a bad nightmare.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, this prednisone.
I went on Singulair and I had a horrible mental experience and I'm never taking it again. There's a suicide warning on the label. Anyway, let's recap the critique of Obama. Doesn't know that much. Thinly brief. He knows the brief. Doesn't know that much more. Grandiose comprehensiveness.
Unlike Bush, who didn't know the brief.
Right, exactly. Well, so he's an improvement on Bush.
Right, okay.
But Clinton knew a lot. Clinton knew more than the brief.
Clinton was possibly the most well-informed president. I don't know. I would say more so than Carter, even.
And even how far back
do you have to go to find a president who was as well-informed on policy as Bill Clinton? I think beyond Eisenhower, beyond...
No,
where'd he go?
Lyndon Johnson knew as much as Clinton.
Lyndon Johnson, yes. Lyndon Johnson compares favorably to Kennedy.
And Kennedy was so damn smart it didn't matter.
Kennedy wasn't that smart.
But
that is such typical Harvard alumni crap.
It's Charlie Peters crap.
Kennedy wasn't that smart. You know, people like George Ball, who worked for both of them, said Johnson was way smarter than Kennedy, but just had this inferiority complex.
Charlie Peters said that when he put Arthur Schlesinger on TV, they had to get him off because Kennedy was so much smarter and would answer the questions better.
It's not true. Go back and look at his press conferences. He's not that impressive.
Brilliant.
He's just good looking.
His press conferences were brilliant and witty. Nothing else compares. Except maybe Mario Cuomo's press conference.
We see a highly select sample of his press
conference. No. You could just look at him giving the key to the city to an astronaut. He's a barrel of laughs. Anyway, the thinly briefed, comprehensive grandiosity and too conscientious to change his course. Too uncynical. So everybody's predicting, like Jacob Weisberg, he's going to drop this liberal stuff and reposition himself as a centrist next year. I don't think he's capable of doing that. He's not cynical enough to do that. He's not wildly, grotesquely ambitious enough to do that. He actually believes this stuff. It's a big problem.
Well, then how do you explain the tacking he did, like, in the campaign? And, I mean, you know, come on. He ran far left on foreign policy in some respects during the campaign, and, you know. I will say, in one area in the Middle East, he is kind of staying true to his word beyond anything you can explain in terms of politics, I think.
And he said he was going to downplay Iraq and put all the troops in Afghanistan, and damn if he didn't do that. He may actually believe it. Now, it's...
Yeah, but you don't think he came to believe that for anything other than politically convenient reasons, do you? I mean, being hawkish in Afghanistan was the politically smart thing to do when he did it.
That's an interesting question, but he is being hawkish in Afghanistan, so you think he would send people to their deaths out of cynicism? I'm not so sure. It is true that for all his smarts, Lyndon Johnson based his entire war on poverty on an unproven theory by Piven and Clower that turned out to be BS. So there's something to be said for actually, you know, not just letting the ideas bubble up from the bureaucracy, but actually knowing them yourself. But that's no guarantee. Anyway.
So you think he's too earnest and devoted to actually trying to do the right thing. So your big critique of Obama is that he really wants to do the right thing.
I mean, if you wanted to sell health care, you would not focus on costs. He really thinks bending the cost curve is so much the right thing to do that he's going to talk about it even if it's like a political disaster.
Well, doesn't he have savvy advisors? What's Rahm Emanuel telling him? What's Axelrod telling him?
He seems to have been captured by Orzag. You know, they did some polling, and it showed that they have to talk about costs to get over fears of the deficit.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. All they had to do was make it deficit neutral to get over fears of the deficit. And somebody skewed that, and, you know, Emmanuel's brother, Ezekiel, is one of these big curve benders. He thinks we should abandon the Hippocratic Oath because it encourages doctors to do too much on behalf of their patients. He said that all this half-price pills giving too many tests, that's just the lipstick that we put on the basic core question, which is the Peter Singer question, that we have to ration. So maybe Ezekiel has some effect on Rahm. I don't know.
So it should be first, do harm.
No, it's like be a social doctor and do no harm unless, you know, it's important socially.
Well, the fact is, if you're going to make health care available to everyone, you're going to have to do rationing. There's going to have to be a ceiling on what you're going to get for everyone.
Why can't there be... See, I thought the counter to the Singer article, which made that point, there has to be some rationing, there's a limit, mm-hmm. was Kinsley's point, which is the workman... Of course there has to be some limit, but the workman-like definition of rationing is if Obama would get something that you wouldn't get, that's rationing. So why can't we have a social egalitarian system where whatever the president gets, everybody gets, and we pay the bill for that?
Well, you could do that if the president's going to agree to get mediocre health care, but if you mean people of comparable stature in the private sector, there's no way. I mean, the people who run Fortune 500 companies are going to buy an amount of health care that we can't possibly give to everyone.
I'm talking about in the government system. Obviously, you have
to let rich people
go outside the system. But in terms of what Medicare pays for, you know, when Obama retires on Medicare, it doesn't matter if he's Albert Einstein or if he's Stephen Hawking or if there's, he has high stature, low stature, rich, poor. He's going to get the same health care. And that's, in fact, sort of what Medicare provides. I mean, my father was a high-stature person. He got the same health care as a bunch of plumbers and
mail
carriers.
Your father was the Chief Justice of the California Supreme Court?
No, he was an Associate Justice.
And so, never mind then. That is like a justice on the California Supreme Court, right?
Correct. And he was in the same waiting room with, you know, he wasn't a very pompous or assertive or macho guy. He wouldn't have thrown his weight around anyway, but he was in the same waiting room at UCLA Oncology Center with a bunch of basically working class people who were on Medicare, and they were all getting good care, and why can't that be the model? Why does the model have to be anything more than that?
Well, I agree that you can constrain what's available to even the highest status government employees.
I don't think he was constrained.
What?
I don't think he was constrained. He got pretty generous care. You can have rationing at high levels of generosity and low levels. Why shouldn't we have one at high level of generosity? People understand that. Why go around how we have to measure their quality years of life and, you know, send Stephen Hawking out on the ice floe?
He's doing okay.
His low quality of life, he rates low on the Peter Singer scale.
He's still alive, isn't he, Hawking?
Correct.
Isn't that the longest anyone's ever lived with Lou Gehrig's disease?
I don't know. I don't know about Lou Gehrig's.
So we were going to talk about this other stuff. I mean, speaking of conundrums.
Okay.
What was the other stuff? Oh, the neg.
The other stuff, there was this column in the New York Times about Darwinian ethics. It seems to completely misunderstand what the whole idea of Darwinian ethics was.
Well, it does and it doesn't. I think it's more complicated than that. We should tell people what it is. What is the column about?
I've been talking to us.
Well, the question, as I recall, is just like, if you get, say, plastic surgery, and so look better than you actually would look, given your genetic endowment at this stage in life or whatever, Is it unethical to attract mates on that basis, right?
Right.
Okay, and now the thing
because
I think...
Because your offspring are going to have your hideous genetic characteristics.
Now the confusion I think you are suggesting is one between kind of conscious and unconscious motivation, right? Because the Darwinian theory about why people are attracted to attractive mates or robust mates or whatever is that it's because then their offspring will have the same genes and be attractive or be robust and thus have better prospects of surviving and or reproducing and blah, blah, blah. So,
no,
your
I thought
point...
The confusion was that the author seemed to believe that if you were behaving in a Darwinian fashion, doing anything to get your genes into the next generation, that that was somehow more moral because we had an understanding of evolutionary psychology, when in fact, evolutionary psychology doesn't change regular morality, as I understand it. It just makes regular morality that has nothing to do with Darwinism all that much more important because we have to impose it by sheer force of will on our evil Darwinian selves.
Oh, so you're saying they were committing the naturalistic fallacy.
Correct.
By assuming that our Darwinian motivation reflects kind of right.
Correct.
Okay, because there's a separate possible confusion between conscious and unconscious motivation, right? I mean...
Explain that to me.
Well, there are two possibilities. If in case A, you imagine a person looking at an attractive person and let's say they're not especially attracted to them, but they think to themselves, well, my kids will be attractive, so I will marry this person. If I marry this person, I'll have attractive kids, so I'll do it. So there's a conscious expectation of the reproductive payoff, okay?
Right.
And you could say that, you know, if you mislead them, in that case, you know, you're misleading them relative to this conscious expectation. But that's not necessarily what's going on. I mean, it's at least some of what's going on, and I would say much or most usually is that, yes, we have the attraction to the person because during evolution that did lead to the reproductive success of the offspring, but the expectation isn't necessarily conscious. So all you really want is an attractive mate. That's all you consciously want. So would you say it's unethical in that case too, or it's unethical, if at all, only in the case where there is the conscious desire to... Am I making sense? Please say yes.
You're making sense in the distinction, but it seems to me it's definitely immoral to go ahead without disclosing if there's a conscious thing, but I think it's also a little immoral if there's an unconscious thing, and it's also incurable if there's an unconscious thing because it's unconscious, so you can never, you know, you're about to marry a woman and she says, oh, by the way, I actually had a gigantic deformed nose at birth and I've had a nose job,
uh-huh.
And our children are going to have gigantic and deformed noses. Well, he can consciously try to compensate for his unconscious impulse, but he can never know if he's actually compensating enough. You know, his unconscious impulse, which is not necessarily dishonorable, is sort of being betrayed by his conscious self, and so it could still be immoral.
Well, let me.
You know,
but would you say if there is, suppose in the extreme case, there's no conscious thing going on? Okay, you're just attracted to the person.
Well, there's
your
really
genes
a
make you attracted to the
on.
Person. You have no conscious expectation, A, and B, you will not be less happy if your kids are unattractive because you just love them and that's fine. Would you say there's anything unethical about the plastic surgery in that case?
With disclosure or without disclosure?
Oh, well, without. If there's disclosure, it can't be unethical. Without disclosure.
No, I was trying to make an argument that with disclosure, it's still unethical because your unconscious, unmeasurable self is still being betrayed, and you can never really know if you've
with disclosure. It's
I was trying. I thought I was.
Man,
it's not an argument.
It
I believe.
Must be
I think
hard.
The whole
it must be hard to be Mickey Kouse. I gotta say.
I'm saying the whole thing is a minor infraction, but and I think
no wonder you're such a neurotic.
I
wreck,
think disclosure.
Mickey. I mean, you're just hyper conscientious. This
I
is
was
ridiculous.
Just sketching out an argument.
You need help.
That's the steroids talking about.
I know, but it's I like the steroids.
I'm going to do the sideways Ezra Klein thing, so.
I took one of these steroid things right before we came on, and I think it kicked in about 5 minutes in because I haven't had really significant back pain since then, and I've been doing a lot of screaming.
Anyway, I think it's all trivial. Obviously, you should disclose. That's sort of the common sense solution, but we're just talking about how that relates to evolutionary psychology, and evolutionary psychology tells us that a lot of our motives are unconscious, so it seems to me it's not just enough to not deceive the conscious person, you also have to sort of not deceive the unconscious person. Which would make having the plastic surgery in the first place immoral. So I guess that sort of proves too much, as we lawyers
say. There are very few cases where I've heard anybody say about any ethical situation that full disclosure is not enough. But you're saying that here.
I'm just saying that if you have a column devoted to Darwinian ethics, maybe you have to consider the possibility of not deceiving the unconscious.
It's an interesting wrinkle, for sure. I just think the way you come out on it is pretty extreme.
I don't agree with the argument I'm making. I'm just making the argument.
I mean, there's also the problem separately, kind of. This is kind of an ethical issue if you're a utilitarian, which is just that all this plastic surgery stuff, like so much stuff, it's a zero-sum game, right? I mean, your gain comes at someone else's loss. So just from a social point of view, it's not an ideal investment of resources. But that's
because
true
there's
so
like
much.
There's an arms race of plastic surgery?
Right, an arms race of plastic surgery that I plan to get involved in.
There sure is around here.
Within a year or two. What? Yeah,
there sure is around here.
I know. I was, you know, as you know, I was out there in Southern California with you a couple of months ago, and you're not kidding.
Anyway, I've had plastic surgery, Bob.
Where? I don't mean where. I mean where on your body. I don't mean like...
You don't know, Bob. I had a lump removed from the top of my head right here.
Did you really?
I really did.
Do you think the hair will ever grow back?
There was no hair there when I had it removed.
Oh.
It was a benign cyst.
Did you really?
It may actually be there on the early blogging heads and, like, had disappeared on the later ones.
Did you really have a benign cyst removed for cosmetic reasons?
Yeah.
I had never noticed your benign cyst, Mickey. You wore it well.
Thank you.
Has this helped?
Good question. It's a multi-factor test that you can't, hard to figure out.
Now, there's a related ethical conundrum, right? The one raised by
Connor Friedersdorf, who works for you. Is he one of your employees who doesn't have health insurance?
He's not really. He kind of intermittently does some stuff, and he was actually a more thoroughgoing employee for a while, but he's largely moved on to bigger and better things.
Right, and he's written about this pickup technique called the NEG.
Right.
Which he claims is one of the sleaziest pickup techniques short of drugging.
And it consists of just saying something a little negative about the woman in this case. It's something men do with women. And it's funny, I had heard about it a few weeks before. A friend of mine who had been reading a book about how to pick up spectacularly attractive women or something.
Right.
And he said the way he had it is this works especially well with really beautiful women. You just say one little, you just say like, what's the thing with your hair or something? Just one little thing, and then,
well first,
you know what I'm saying?
If you're a guy like me, it's the only thing that works. It's not like just one possible technique. I do think it's creepy to actually lower somebody's self-esteem as opposed to building it up, because serotonin is good and people perform at a higher level when they're on serotonin generally. So the more
Some people have too much serotonin. No, some people have a destructive amount of serotonin, and the society would be better off if it were lowered. So that's not a good enough reason.
Okay.
Especially, extremely attractive women are sometimes
people.
A good example.
Sorry?
Well, I didn't say anything that I should have said, so go ahead.
But I was trying to draw a distinction between, it seems to me if you ignore somebody, that's very effective, almost as effective as actually.
Well, that's what I was going to say. What
something.
Is the ethical difference between the neg and, say, playing hard to get?
Well,
because
playing hard to get is a
self-esteem lower. What?
If you read Connor's stuff, turning your back on somebody is a classic neg. So that's just playing hard to get.
But that's a widely accepted tactic.
Right. So he would have to hate that, too.
We should ask him why he doesn't, if he doesn't.
Yeah. The reason I think that's a legitimate tactic is because you're also controlling your own impulses. You're presenting your best face. I'm not somebody who's completely swayed by beauty. I have, you know, higher values. It turns out there's a pickup acronym for that, too. DHV, displaying higher values. There's this whole crazy world of pickup artists.
So what? You mean like attractive woman?
I'm not swayed by superficial beauty. I have.
So she kind of like gives you a come hither look and you start talking about the mind-body problem or something?
I don't think you even need a come hither look. It's very unlikely that a beautiful woman will give me a come hither look. It's just you're not fawningly attentive. You go on to other things.
Yeah.
That's the Tao of Steve.
Mm-hmm.
You leave. And it's
you
a
say,
part
listen,
of,
I'd love to stay, but I got to go think about immigration reform.
Yeah. But what the Connor stuff, the question it led me to is, a lot of this. Well, first you're like in a select group. If you're even trying to pick up women in bars, you know you're playing a weird game. If that's your, I never picked up a woman in a bar.
What is the meaning of pickup? What does that say about your intentions with the woman?
Well, you get her number and go on dates. I assume that that's.
Well, so it's just trying to meet women.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing, but it's not the only way to meet people in bars. So you're sort of, if you're trying to sort of, if you read Connor's stuff, it's almost as if he actually goes around meeting women in bars, and that's the only way he's thought of meeting women. Which seems to me that it's only 10% of men and women who actually meet each other in bars.
We should ask him about this.
So
you're saying, like, museums are
you could
better.
Go to blogger parties, for example. What? Sorry?
There's another question. Is there a gender asymmetry here? I mean, would he say that for a woman to use the neg on a man is just as bad? Would he say that?
That was an issue. He would. That was it. But that was an issue in his commenters. A lot of them said a woman using a neg on a man is just a jerk. Whereas a man is sort of compensating for the inherent asymmetry that he's pursuing and the woman is pursued. There obviously is an inherent asymmetry.
But it isn't that the woman is intrinsically the pursued. If you're talking about just, we probably shouldn't get too deeply into this. I think this is the steroids talking.
But here's my question.
Yeah?
Isn't there a beta male technique? All these pickup artists, all these techniques are designed to sort of portray them as the alpha males. Mm-hmm. I guess it's because the alpha males are the people who score in bars. But isn't there a beta male technique? I mean, beta males do get their genes into the next generation, right? They have some technique for doing that. It doesn't involve beating their chest.
Well, they might, although,
and beating
I mean, there's something to keep in mind,
male.
But be clear, whether we're talking beta or omega, a key fact about evolution is that when you have a species like ours where the males can reproduce more often than the females because the females have to carry the offspring to birth, there is more variance among male reproductive success. So no, there are some males who basically lose out altogether. And, I mean, I'm not talking modern times. I'm talking during evolution.
Well, this
accounts for so much of the asymmetry in sexual psychology is the fact that there are many more men who got shut out of the reproductive sweepstakes altogether than women.
Right, but this is the key question.
Yeah.
Do beta males get shut out?
Do they get shut out, you're asking?
Yes.
No, omega males get shut out. Beta males don't.
This is very important to me, Bob.
I know, because you're an omega male, and I hate to bring this news to you in front of, you know,
screw you, I'm a beta male.
But
Step outside, I'm a beta male. I'll beat the crap out of you if you say that again.
Because you have less to lose. And that's smart. That's the way a beta male should behave. And that's why evolutionary psychology would say some forms of risk-taking behavior are more common among males because if you're in danger of being shut out of the sweepstakes altogether, you got nothing to lose.
I mean, when I think of a beta male, I think of a wingman, okay? You got your alpha male, your Brad Pitt or Ashton Kutcher, and then you got his wingman, who's like the nice guy and not an asshole and doesn't challenge people and exhibit macho serotonin. Okay, that's the beta male.
Okay.
The beta males, there is some strategy for beta male success. I'm trying to encourage you to write the beta male pickup handbook.
No, there is a nice guy strategy.
Yeah, that's all I'm talking about.
I'd recommend that you follow that.
Right, but there is a strategy, and none of these pickup techniques involve that. They all assume that the nice guy is a loser because they're chasing after women in bars.
Right, the whole idea behind the neg is that that's not the strategy you're pursuing. But, you know, I suspect that the idea is supposed to be that even if you're basically playing the nice guy thing, you're supposed to just trot out a little bit of the neg. Because it's kind of just like playing hard to get, which probably always works.
Yeah, I understand, but my point is, you're dodging my point. You're failing to comprehend my point.
Okay, what is it?
Suppose you are a beta male. Doesn't your pickup strategy differ from the alpha male strategy, and wouldn't it be more useful to write a, instead of being Neil Strauss writing the game about how to seem to be an alpha male, which seems to be what Connor's commenters are hooked into, write another book for how to be the nice guy beta male and still succeed, which probably does not involve trying to pick up women in bars in the first place.
So a nice guy's finish first book.
No, they don't finish first, but they finish, you know.
How to not finish last.
They don't finish in the Omega pack.
I mean, I think the general pattern is that probably, I mean, if I accept all of the premises of your discussion, which of course I would not be so politically incorrect as to do, but suppose I were to do that, I would say beta males are probably, if you look at what's working, they're sending more cues suggestive of longer-term commitment. Or they have to promise more in that regard implicitly or explicitly. That's what being nice is, in a way.
Right.
And then asking, you know, and well, never mind.
No, that's a huge part of the beta male strategy. I agree.
Right.
I guess it's also how to be somebody's second husband.
How to be somebody's second husband.
The second husband is classically the beta male, right? The first husband is the jerk alpha male.
Wait, which is the one she's having the affair with? Are we talking about something totally different here?
No.
Oh, the second husband. Yeah. You mean serial monogamy.
Yes.
Yes, the second husband would generally be nicer. A reflection of the valuable lesson she's learned in being married to a jerk, yes.
Correct. Okay, well, there must be some beta male handbook other than waiting for the women you like to marry and get divorced.
No, but that's a good book in itself.
That would be a valuable book for you to write, Bob. And a moneymaker.
Yeah.
Unlike this Evolution of God crap, which only got to like 12 on the New York Times bestseller list?
Eight.
Who's counting? But eight, I mean,
For 2 weeks it was number eight, by the way.
If somebody had to choose between you, eight, and Malcolm Gladwell, one for 10 years.
Yeah.
Who are they going to choose, you know?
They don't have to choose. I'm married, he's not.
That's why you're like the bad person to ask for this advice.
No, I can answer with detachment, and yet serious heartfelt concern, because you're my friend, and because I remember a time when I was in your very predicament, Mickey.
It's not a predicament, Bob.
I remember a time when I faced your array of enticing opportunities,
there
is what I meant to say.
There you go. You're trying to get me to slip into Omega status. Not going to happen.
I recommend prednisone, I'll tell you.
Okay. Well, better prednisone than Singulair.
What is Singulair? Is that an anti-inflammatory but non-steroidal?
Singulair is the most advanced anti-allergy drug.
Uh-huh.
And it intervenes at an earlier part of the allergy chain of events. It's better than an antihistamine. But I'm never taking it again because it had toxic metal effects.
Yeah, a lot of these things do that to me.
If it's on the warning label, it's going to happen to me. That's basically my attitude.
Now, but there's contradictions on the warning label. They can't all happen to you.
Okay, that's good. That's some comfort. I think we're through. Is it possible that we're through? There was something you wanted to talk about.
Wait, was there more than one thing? I wanted to, you know.
We wanted to talk about the vicious review of your book in the New Republic.
Oh, did my book get reviewed in the New Republic?
It's generated no buzz at all, Bob.
Sorry
about
that.
And it's done no harm to the Bob brand.
Well, I assume it's a positive review because, you know, I'm a contributing editor at the New Republic. And so you would think that if they reviewed the book at all, they would assign it to somebody. But wait a second, Mickey. There's actually a policy at the New Republic that you're not supposed to have books by contributing editors reviewed.
Bob, I think there's certain forces that override this policy.
Huh. Wonder what they are.
Commission a hatchet job. I mean,
and who would they be?
I don't know. How are your relations with Frankie Four?
Better than they are with they.
Yeah. Okay. Well. So I haven't read this review, nor have I heard that much buzz about it. It's endless. I assume it's negative.
I think it'd be safe to call it negative. Of course, you never know how these things will turn out when you assign them, but this one happened to be negative.
I'm sure they had no idea how it would turn out.
You never know.
Yeah. So, you're going to respond to this?
I have written a little bit of a response, Mickey.
You're going to do what you recommend Obama do with the town hall protesters and demonize them? Go populist and demonize.
I think the mistakes he makes in the review in characterizing my work are honest ones. That is, he did not consciously misrepresent my work. However, they are a little on the pervasive side. So I put what is a short list of them up, or will by the time this airs, on the evolutionofgod.net website. And I guess maybe it'll be something like, well, we'll put the link up next to this or somewhere, and I guess maybe it'll be something like evolutionofgod.net/coin, C-O-Y-N-E, and it will be named after the person who wrote the review. That URL will be in honor of the person who wrote the review.
That's generous of you.
What?
That is generous of you.
Well, you know, it's the kind of guy I am.
Yeah.
And I'll be curious what our commenters say.
Because,
you know, it seems to me like if you read my reply, you would be convinced that... Well, you would be reluctant to ever trust anything this guy said again about someone whose work he's criticizing, but I concede that when you write a book, your vision of all reviews is completely warped. So I could be like making, you know, a mountain out of a molehill. So I'll be genuinely interested in which commenters say my reply added up to nothing.
You've had a pretty impressive string of very, very positive reviews. So I think it's about time.
If you want to say that, I will not gainsay it. I will let that be the word that gets out.
Have you been reviewed by the New York Review?
No.
Oh. Well, there's
never
another...
ever. I mean, never, ever, ever, ever. However.
Huh.
I think they were considering it, but they are late to the table.
Right. That could be 10 years from now.
Yes. No. I actually met the editor of the New York Review finally at my book party in New York, as it happens.
And did you neg him?
I did not nag him. But he was like, he was talking about people he could imagine. He was actually having trouble coming up with someone who might make sense to review it, but he was like thinking out loud.
You talked to the editor of the New York Review about people who might review your book? Isn't that some kind of gross ethical violation?
I don't think it's going to come to anything. It would at some places like the Times Book Review. Yes, it would be. They're pretty strict about that. But I think. I don't know. I didn't suggest anybody.
Okay.
I didn't suggest anybody.
Okay.
And it's not going to happen. I mean, you know.
Did you slip him a fiver?
I would. I'd slip him a credit card, but...
Slip him a prednisol, something? Yeah.
Slip him a prednisone.
Well...
So, no, but your view... Yeah, your view is we don't do backstory on these things, right?
What do you mean?
Unlike reviews.
I think the dangers of us coming off looking like jerks if we do the backstory outweigh the possible benefits.
You mean you or me?
Well, both of us, but you mainly.
Well, I appreciate your concern. Can I say one not totally unrelated thing?
Yeah. We're approaching an hour, so...
I know.
Okay.
I know. That, I just want to say that Stephanie, the commenter, took the words out of my mouth. And I wish I had this, There was a comment from The Prop. I had belittled how serious the analysis that Christopher Hitchens does of the question of whether religion has done, whether it, as he puts it, poisons everything, or whether the reality is perhaps more complex than that.
Right.
And The Prop quoted something that Hitchens had said as the litmus test, as evidence that actually he has laid down a guideline for doing a serious analysis. And it occurred to me that actually he had laid it down in this highly flawed way because he'd used the word could instead of would, or would instead of could, or something like that. I forget. But anyway, Stephanie, the commenter, said exactly the same thing. And I wish I, damn, I wish I had the Hitchens thing, because then I, the prop comment, because I could give this to you as a test, but I don't.
Stephanie, what did Stephanie say? I'm all confused.
I think it was, I think what Hitchens had said is something like, well, he said, imagine either bad things or good things done, and then ask yourself, could it have been done, that were done in the name of religion? And then he said, ask yourself, could it be done without religion?
Right.
And the, obviously, I think he must have been saying, okay, look at the good things that have been done in the name of religion, and ask yourself, could it be done without religion? Well, obviously. And the bad things done in the name of religion could be done without religion. The question is, would it have been done? That's the analytical question, as Stephanie pointed out.
As Stephanie says, that you should substitute would for could.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
And she's right. I mean, it's like one of these open and shut things. I don't really think, I mean, you should never say there's no room for debate, but I think it's a clear-cut analytical point, and she wins some sort of award for having made it.
Great. So you're going to link to her comment.
I should link to her comment.
Good. And,
But that's just your way of getting me off stage. You're ready to end this, aren't
you? I'm demonstrating alpha behavior. I'm ordering you around.
Yeah. Okay.
But is there some way we can post my picture of Regina Spektor?
Did you take it?
You betcha.
Up close?
That was pretty close. I was like 15 feet away.
Did you talk to her? Now, what is this?
She wasn't talking to anybody. She had a bad cold.
She always does. I think she just says that to guys, or to some guys.
Well, her voice didn't ordinarily have spectacular power.
Yeah.
And it had good power, but not spectacular
power.
She
works too hard. She works too hard.
They were working her like a dog. She had like three concerts a day.
Yeah. She works too hard. Yes, we can post. I mean, I don't know. You want to post it and we'll link, or do you want us to do the posting? We're
well, I don't know where.
Site.
Does one post it to some site and then you link to the site? I'm an idiot when it comes to that. I'll send it to you. You can do whatever you want with it.
Yes. Send us an
electronic version. It's not all that fascinating a photo. It's just if it makes you jealous and envious.
You've seen the picture of her with my two lovely daughters, right?
I have.
Yeah.
But she's, after a long trip on the road, she's looking more babushka-ish than that. What can I say?
You're amazing, man. You got pretty high standards. You know, I think that may be your problem. Not that you have a problem, and not that I'm suggesting you do, but I think that's your problem.
We're heavily into the neck here.
Okay, well, we should, before it spirals into an arms race after another prednisone rush, we should call it a day?
Yeah. It's been real, and...
Yeah.
You know, you're great, whatever else I may have said negative.
No, you're great.
Okay. I will talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye.
See you around.